Welcome to the Bioethics Channel, a production of the Center for Practical Bioethics. For more information about the center and its programs, go to practicalbioethics.org. That's practicalbioethics.org. It's important for all of us to make our wishes known for medical care when we are seriously ill at the end of life. It's a difficult discussion for all of us, young or old. For a number of years, the center has offered a booklet called Caring Conversations to help individuals and their families make practical preparations for end-of-life decisions. Now the center has tailored a version of Caring Conversations for use by young adults. Joining us now to talk about it are two volunteers at the Center for Practical Bioethics, Dr. Barbara Boyer and Lauren Duville. Dr. Boyer, talk to us about how Caring Conversations for young adults evolved.
Laurel, about a little over 5 years ago, the National Institute of Health put out a paper encouraging cities and medical centers to look at pediatric palliative care and wanted to encourage developing centers of excellence in the United States in that arena. The center at that time wanted to participate and put together a coalition of healthcare providers in pediatrics in the Kansas City region to study this issue and make recommendations. People from all different venues participated. We had over 50 different representatives from various agencies and healthcare facilities, etc. And after a 3-year process, we came up with certain initiatives, and one of the main things that we found was that there was no document available for young people to facilitate having a conversation if, one, they were unable to speak for themselves, or two, they were seriously ill, or possibly even facing the end of life. There was nothing to really help them have those kinds of conversations, like the center had developed years and years ago for adults.
It's hard enough for adults to have these conversations. How did you work towards tailoring this for a younger audience?
It's a good question, because it's a hard enough conversation for anybody to have, and creating a document, I know a great deal of work went into the original. However, it was designed with a audience in mind of like a 50-year-old woman primarily, and we were trying to reach people who were a lot younger. So at the time, I had a daughter who was 17, and I took the original Caring Conversations booklet and asked her to look through it and see how she, as a teenager, would go about modifying that document to make it friendly for someone her age. And she and I together went through this document and, number one, cut it way down in size so that a young person wouldn't be intimidated, or where they would be more willing to attempt to fill it out or to at least have conversation about it. Then we took this modified document and started using it in test groups with various groups of young people around the city. And as we would test it out, we would get feedback from kids and then what they said needed to change or stay the same, we would do. And over probably 2 to 3 years, we've been working on this, making it what we hope is a good working document for people in the age range of 16 to 25 years old.
Lauren, you fall within that category, so you're the resident young person in the room to talk about this. We had a young woman in your age group say that your generation is weirded out by the idea of dying and the end of life. Do you think that's fairly typical of young people within your generation?
Well, Laurel, I'm not sure so much if people my age, you know, I'm 22, I'm not sure if people my age necessarily are weirded out by the conversation. I just think that they don't feel that it necessarily pertains to them. Because most often, I mean, I personally haven't even had any family members outside of my own grandmother who's passed away. So the reality is different for young people because they just aren't in touch with it, I think, to the level that someone who is facing end-of-life issues, who maybe is a senior or who has elder family members or more of them, would be. So I don't know, but I do think it's important, and I do think that that people my age need to sort of come to terms with these types of topics and even to talk about them with other people, because it's not only is it a good way to sort of understand your own wishes, but to understand others, which is really ultimately what the goal is, so that if you are unfortunately faced with these types of decisions, or if your family members are, they at least have some sort of guideline to sort of alleviate whatever burdens might be associated with not having any sort of clear-cut guidelines for what it is that you would want them to do, and to sort of alleviate any further problems that come with having to make those difficult decisions.
Dr. Boyer, is that fairly typical with what you heard from the test groups as you rolled this product out to younger audiences?
I think Lauren gave a good summary of young people. One thing I have noticed is it really depends on the individual, and a lot of things that we don't know about that individual is what kind of education or conversation they've had with their own individual family around these issues. It's kind of like sex education. Some people are really comfortable talking about it and really, really willing to have those conversations, and other people think that it's taboo and shouldn't have that. And I think the same is true with this topic of talking about death and dying, or at least decision-making when a person can't speak for themselves. They don't want to necessarily admit. But young people, some of them are really willing and really excited and tell us, thank you, we're so glad you did this. And other people check the box that says, no, I never want to have this conversation, and I never will, and it's not appropriate.
Don't bring it up again.
Yeah.
Something
so,
like that.
You know, but I would say, really, honestly, more people fall in the category of they're glad that there's something available and they're willing to talk about it.
Now, Lauren, you referenced something to the effect that you didn't have a close family member who has died. Do you think that that would make a difference on how younger people would approach this issue if they saw it somewhat firsthand?
Well, certainly, but I also think that that doesn't necessarily mean that a young person can't relate, or that they can't formulate an opinion on it. I know that I have my own opinions on what I would want to happen for me if ever I was in a position where I was incapacitated and really had no hope for any improvement in terms of a medical standpoint, and what I would hope that my own family would want. So I think, yes, I mean, it kind of removes the issue even further from maybe a young person's reality. But, you know, everyone, even any and all of my peers have always heard stories about young people dying, young people and their families sort of having to make these decisions, or at least being faced with them. And certainly there have been many public cases that I think most of society has heard about. And I think that just because I personally have never had a family member or multiple family members that have dealt with these sorts of issues, that they do certainly cross my mind. And I think it's very important to think about them and to think about what, you know, you would want done. And I think even a youthful age can be taken to mean, you know, someone from the age of 18 all the way up until being a parent, and you can still fall in that range of being young and having to make these decisions who you really do want to be responsible. And I think for some young people that doesn't always include a spouse, it might not include a parent. There's a lot of different things that you have to take into account.
Now, you talked about public cases, Lauren, and Dr. Boyer, Terry Schiavo, of course, was one of those public cases in the early 2000s. She was only 26 when she collapsed and began that long, public, and very painful process to her death some 15 years later. Did that story influence how you approached the idea of caring conversations for young adults?
Laurel, it absolutely did, because 5 years ago or 4 years ago, when this case was way prominent in the news, but that was when we were really working on this document. And so it was on all of our minds. And because of her case and others prior to that, i.e. Nancy Cruzan, our goal was to hopefully get more people having conversations about this topic so that we could not have a case like Terry Schiavo, not have a Nancy Cruzan case, because what came out, if you really look at those cases, is that it was hard to tell if anyone had had a conversation, and there certainly was no written documentation in those cases to say what those young women would have wanted in their circumstances. It was very difficult. And so we still are very hopeful that people will look at our document or look at any similar kind of document or just this whole issue of conversation around wishes at a time when you can't speak for yourself, and people will start to talk about it and thus eliminate this misunderstanding that comes about in families when no one's had the talk, as we like to call it.
Now, Lauren, taking a look at the document, one thing that it emphasizes is just start having the talk and there's no right or wrong answers. Is that something that's appealing to you?
Well, absolutely, because I think everyone has a different opinion, and I certainly think that all those different opinions should be embraced, and that's the whole point, that there is no right or wrong answer. And even when you do have a conversation, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to solve the problem if ever you're faced with it, but it certainly makes things easier. It gives you some sort of guideline. And absolutely, I think it's not only important but crucial that you have a conversation that might be different for different people. It sort of validates the whole process, in my opinion.
Now, Dr. Boyer, if you had one hope for this document, Caring Conversations for Young Adults, what would it be?
It's hard to put it into just one hope, but I think my hope is that more people, i.e. all people, will have a conversation. So my hope is this will enable people at a different stage of life, not old, not senior citizens, where we think we need to start talking about that, but a young person will have the conversation, and it may even add that the parents of this young person will also then have a conversation with each other or with their child or maybe with their older parents, and so it will establish kind of this chain of opening conversation. So that would be my hope. Change the conventional wisdom and let's talk about it.
And April 16th is the day to do that, with National Healthcare Decisions Day, is it not?
Yes, it is. National Healthcare Decisions Day, my understanding is it was established on April 16th, the day after April 15th, which is when our taxes are due. Because when you're born, there are two certainties: that you will pay taxes and that you will pass on. And so we want to have a greater awareness of having conversations and knowing that we need to make healthcare decisions. So doing it the day after your taxes are due is important. There will be a lot of events going on in the city sponsored by various organizations, including the Bioethics Center. I know that there will be people at public libraries, etc. If you have questions or want to find information about that day or about any kind of healthcare decisions, you can go to the Practical Bioethics website.
Well, Dr. Barbara Boyer, Lauren Duville, thanks for your time and sharing this information with us. For more information about Caring Conversations for Young Adults, go to practicalbioethics.org. That's practicalbioethics.org. You've been listening to the Bioethics Channel, a production of the Center for Practical Bioethics. I'm your host, Laurel LeBoux. Thanks for listening to the Bioethics Channel.